This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new state representative in Michigan's 62nd district next year. John Bison is a physician and former president of the Michigan State Medical Society. He is seeking the Republican nomination for the district, which includes the city of Battle Creek. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Gordon, so much for having me.
We're also joined today by Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And John Bison, why don't you begin by introducing yourself to our audience and telling us a little bit about your background, why you're running for State House.
Well, I come from Michigan. I have lived all over Michigan. I was born in the city of Detroit and raised in the suburbs of Detroit. I went to undergrad at Michigan State University and subsequently to medical school back at Wayne State University in Detroit. I spent a year of postgraduate medicine before going and joining the Air Force, where I spent the next 11 years. My first assignment was at a little place called K.I. Sawyer in the Upper Peninsula back when there was a military base up there. And subsequently went to San Antonio, Texas, and subsequently overseas to the Philippines. I spent 11 years in the military, becoming a lieutenant colonel, prior to returning to Battle Creek, which, after being half a world away, was back home again for me, and it was great to be back home. As you said, I spent the last year as president of the State Medical Society, and my duties would oftentimes include going to Lansing and to Washington to represent the 16,000 physicians in our society. And oftentimes I would walk into legislative offices and say, "Hi, my name is Dr. John Bison. I'm a otolaryngologist. I'm an ENT doctor, and I represent 16,000 Michigan physicians." And I would have legislators that would very courteously say, "Yes, I will listen." And I would go through whatever the spiel of the day was. We would talk about the issues and the medical society stance on those issues. And towards the end, it would not be uncommon that the legislators would say something along the lines of, "Okay, thank you very much. This is all well and good, but I'm going to check with Roger before getting back with you, and we'll let you know."
Who's and Roger?
Roger is Roger Kahn. He is a cardiologist. He is chair of appropriations in the Senate. And the last legislative session, he was the only physician in the legislature. And it seemed that even as president of the state society, even representing 16,000 Michigan physicians, the answer I got was, "All well and good, but let me check with our own, and then I'll get back with you." And it became perfectly obvious at that time that if one wants to make a difference, if one wants to really promote change, that you may have to do that as an insider rather than an outsider. And especially with Kate Siegel stepping down, it seemed like this might be an appropriate time to make that jump.
All right, then. Jennifer Bowman, let's start with questions for John Bison.
Great. So it's a crowded race, including yourself. There's two Republicans and three Democrats. It's your first time seeking public office. Do you think you have what it takes?
I'm thinking so. You know, I have an excellent organization. I have a very smart campaign manager and deputy campaign manager who are going to be helping me through this. I have consultants out of Lansing who will be helping me as well. And thus far, the medical community has been very, very supportive, as has the Calhoun County community. I have really been amazed and impressed with the number of people who have met me on the street and saying, "Go get them." A number of former patients that I've had that have come out and said, "We're going to be very, very supportive of you, and thank you so much for doing this for us."
Should note, we are recording on May 28th, the day after the minimum wage bill was approved by the House and Senate, signed into law by Governor Snyder. If you had been there as a member of the House, would you have voted for the minimum wage increase which was approved?
Well, I think a lot depends on the details of the bill, and not being there, I am not privy to all the details in the bill. Minimum wage, as I see it, is a two-edged sword. You know, you raise the limit for some of the population, but there are also some bad things that go along with raises in the minimum wage. If you're on a fixed income, typically minimum wage increases suggest that the prices that you pay for goods at the stores are going to be increasing. And also, the jobs that you have for some of the most vulnerable, some of the people who are at that minimum wage, are going to evaporate. They're going to disappear as that wage goes up higher and higher. And I think that it's a balancing act that oftentimes you need to have. On the one side, there are good things. The other side, there are bad things. And I think that in the work as a legislator, you have to balance that.
Can you give me sort of a broad philosophy of where you would be perhaps on a future, you know, wage adjustment or something like that? I mean, what sort of things would you look at, and how do you make the determination if the wage should go up and how much it should go up?
I like the concept of America as being the land of possibility, the land of social advancement, and I think we've lost a lot of that. You know, when you talk about someone who has a minimum wage job, that isn't a job that he's supposed to have forever. It's supposed to be a job sweeping the floor that you initially get started at before you get promoted to working the cash register, before you get promoted to being assistant manager, before you get promoted to being manager of the store, before you get promoted to being district director, before you get elected to the board of whatever corporation is that you're working for. I mean, there's a series of steps that you're supposed to take, and I think that we need to have that possibility of advancement for all of our workers.
Would you say we need a minimum wage at all?
We need a floor. We need a place to start. And the exact place, I'm not certain of. That isn't one of the things I learned about in medical school, I'm afraid. And talking about a campaign, there are lots of stuff that I still need to learn about. So you may be hearing me say, well, I need to learn more about this simply because my background for the last many years has been in healthcare.
Jennifer?
Well, I kind of want to stay on the topic of something that Calhoun County, although it's not unique to the area, we suffer from income inequality, and we've been lucky enough to see some job gains over the year, mostly in manufacturing. But do you think that we are on the right track as far as job creation? Are we creating the right kinds of jobs for the right kinds of opportunities for Calhoun County residents, or could we be doing a little more diversifying?
When we talk about jobs, I think that jobs and income inequality oftentimes go hand in hand. And if you ask me, are we preparing our youth for the jobs of the future adequately, I'd have to say I'm not certain that we are. I mean, I take a look at our graduation numbers, even in Calhoun County, for those graduating who are currently in the ninth grade, what is our percentage of those who enter the ninth grade graduating from the 12th grade? And as I understand it, that number is around 76%. And that means that 24% of the students in the ninth grade are not going to be graduating from the 12th grade. And what kind of job opportunities do they have if they are going through? I go and I talk to shop owners and they say, you know, we need people who are qualified to work in our shop. And that may involve some background in robotics, that may involve technical skills such as wiring or computer skills, running the robots. It may involve body work. It may involve plumbing or electrical works. And, you know, I don't know that we're giving those people the opportunity to leave school and actively enter a job. And I'd consider that a failure. You need to be able to get out there, and we need to train our kids. And not everyone is destined for college. But if we have those that are interested in college, I think that they ought to have opportunities and ought to be well-educated so they don't end up in remedial classes when they try to go to college. And if they aren't going to college, then we ought to have them on a track that gives them the necessary skills to succeed in life.
How would you go about encouraging more interest in vocational training and those sort of things? A lot of it happens at the community college level now, but how would you perhaps lure students in that direction when for many, you know, families at a certain income level, a four-year college degree is sort of the expectation?
We want to support our children. We want them all to be successful. And that's successful as a plumber, electrician, or perhaps as an electrical engineer or as a PhD physicist. You know, we want our kids to succeed. And this has to be the kids' dream. It can't be our dream. It's the children that we need to be able to get in and support. And if they have an interest in doing some of the more technical skill trades, then I think that we need to work with business to find out what the skills requirement for those jobs are, introduce the kids perhaps through internships, so the two can get to know each other, so they can see what the job really involves, and eventually give them the necessary skills while still in school so that they can transition seamlessly to a actively paying job, something that they can live on.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with John Bison. He is a candidate for the Republican nomination in Michigan's 62nd House District. Also here is Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer. Jennifer?
What I'm hearing is a push for workforce development, which is something that, you know, Battle Creek Unlimited has really, really talked about. But there seems to be now a greater effort in kind of regionalizing that effort. It's been pushed by Governor Snyder. It's been pushed by the economic development groups in the area. Do you think that's the way to go, or should we kind of take the reins on that and handle that at the county level, at the city level? I mean, what's your thought on that?
I would look to our teachers, who oftentimes are with the kids many hours out of the day. I take a look at our educational system, and we spend significant dollars given other industrialized countries. And when you look how our kids do versus other industrialized countries, the United States doesn't stack up quite so well on a world scale. I think we need to re-engineer education, and I think we need to have our teachers who know about this stuff re-engineer education so that we have a world-class education system. I think we need to look to the Germans, who have this sort of training in many of their schools and some of the lowest unemployment rates in all of Europe, and see how they are doing it, because that's not my area of expertise. You know, I need to look to the people who do it to say, to tell me, what do we need to have a world-class education system so that our education system is one that is deserving of a world leader, one that is deserving of our future citizens.
Well, let's talk about how people get to jobs, i.e. Michigan roads, which almost everyone is in agreement are not in very good shape. What are your thoughts on some sort of a long-term solution to fund road repair, maintenance, et cetera?
I oftentimes think that government is best at the local level rather than as you get further and further up. I think that the more the people are involved in their government, the better that government is. When we talk about road funding, I was impressed and amazed that Jace Bolger, our dear speaker, took a look at the budget and says, yes, I found an extra $450 million. I'd like to throw this at the roads. And I think that in many ways, roads funding has to be a priority. And we need to make that road funding. And I would say that perhaps that road funding ought to flow all the way down to the townships where they know where the greatest needs are. That when you repair a road, I would agree that we need guarantees on the road. We spend millions of dollars patching holes in our roads, and the next season, you have those same potholes in the same places. And if you were to ask me, did we really fix that road, I'd have to scratch my head a little bit and say, maybe not. Back in the 1930s, Germany was making roads that lasted 30, 40, 50, 70 years. And it just astounds me that we can't make roads that last more than a season when the technology is out there. And maybe it includes changes in technology. Maybe we need to use innovative surfaces to cover the road so that they last 10 years longer. Maybe, you know, we need a different system, a more competitive system to get the best price for our roads and make sure that there are guarantees and long-term.
When you say there's funding at the local level, or that the local level should make the decisions, doesn't the state have to direct the money that way? Because the townships and cities, I'll tell you right now, they don't have a lot of extra cash lying around.
And I could understand that too, and that was exactly what I meant to imply, that I think that the funding needs to be found at the state level and then flow down to the states and townships where it can be utilized.
But something like I-94...
Is a state issue, and that obviously is not only a state issue, but a federal issue. And when we talk about the federal government, then I think it's going to be extremely important that we get all matching funds from the federal governments for our roads, and we don't let matching funds go unused. So if federal dollars are available, I think we need to draw down those dollars and make sure that we capture those dollars, because right now we aren't very good at capturing federal dollars at the state level.
The Calhoun County Board of Commissioners has, you know, they've really applauded Speaker Bolger's proposal that's come out. But they've also said that that's not enough. And there's a whole lot of money we're going to need to fix these roads. And they've discussed a possible countywide road millage. Townships are discussing that. If there isn't that funding that Lansing can allocate, I mean, is that the way that the discussion should go?
I think that I would wait until we saw what the state government was going to do. You know, Speaker Richardville is talking about, I want to say, $1.6 billion per year.
Senate Majority Leader.
Leader Richardville is talking about $1.6 billion on an annual basis, on an ongoing basis.
And Governor Snyder's about in that same ballpark, too.
1.2, or I'm sure he could be talked up to 1.6. That wouldn't be much of an argument for him. And you're right, but my answer would be, let's wait and see what the state is going to do before we start taxing our citizens here locally. I mean, as I read the Constitution, as I read Public Act 51, it says that the counties are, and the state is responsible for the roads. And I think we ought to give them the opportunity to live up to the law.
At the state level, if you were a state representative, would you consider an increase in the gas tax, an increase in vehicle fees to pay for road maintenance?
I think there's always a balance that you have to have, and I would look at that as being a possibility. Increasing taxes is not my very most favorite answer to any question, but you have to take a look at the good and the bad in each proposition that comes forth, and due diligence is required. You do your homework, and you listen to the people and see what they want to do, and you know, that all helps in the formation of your answer.
Jennifer?
I kind of want to switch over to a different topic. A couple months ago, as I'm sure you may know, Kellogg made an announcement to move some jobs to the Grand Rapids area. And it caused quite an uproar from the community. Elected officials kind of chimed in. There was a lot of criticism kind of from Mark Schauer against Governor Snyder about going, this is your hometown, this is something you should fight for, to keep these jobs in your hometown. On the other side of the coin, they're saying the jobs are staying in Michigan. I mean, if you were in Lansing at that time, what would you have done?
Boy, that's a hypothetical question. It's hard to say. You know, I am looking forward to working with the Kellogg Company. I'm looking forward to working with all of our business leaders trying to keep jobs in Calhoun County. You know, that's going to be one of my priorities. The reason that I want to go to Lansing is to make sure that we get well represented. And you don't do that by staying in a shell. You don't do that by just staying in your office. You need to interact with the business community. You need to interact with the schools, with the citizens in your community. I would have been happy to sit down and talk with them and see what we need to do in order to make Kellogg successful. Because I think that's what they're out for, but to see if we can't help Calhoun County in the same process.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question dealing with medicine.
Oh, no, this is terrible.
Do you believe that the state did the right thing by expanding Medicaid?
The Medicaid expansion, if you were to ask me about our health care in general, I would tell you that I feel that our health care system is failing way too many people, that our healthcare is too expensive, that our healthcare system, in my mind, is somewhat broken. And in my mind, adding another 500,000 people to a program may not be the absolute best answer. In many ways, I think that we need to fix our healthcare system. And once we have it fixed, then we need to take care of the population. You know, being an old military officer, you leave no soldier behind, you leave no one behind. And I would love to see everyone taken care of in a system, but I think that we need to get that system right first before we do that.
Can you address that much at the state level, or is that more of a federal government issue in terms of the healthcare system, because there's all sorts of things across state lines, et cetera?
I anticipate that in the next 2, 3, 5 years that the federal government is going to find that it can't afford the Medicaid system that it promised, And I anticipate the formation of block grants going back to the states. And I see tremendous opportunities in the block grant process. I see the federal government under Medicaid saying, here is a set amount of dollars. I want you to go out there and I want you to take care of the poor in your state. And we're going to see interesting things in each of the 50 states where we're going to have various states with various initiatives, perhaps some involving HRAs, perhaps some involving patient-centered medical homes, perhaps even some moving over into a single-payer system. And we'll have experiments, and we'll be able to go in there, and we'll be able to analyze those systems. We'll be able to see what actually improves quality, what drives down costs, what actually improves the health of the community. And once we get those answers, we'll have a much better idea on a system that we can build upon that will take care of our people in a cost-efficient manner.
Okay, I understand your point there is to try a lot of different things and see what works. So what would you like to experiment with? I mean, what in your mind right now do you think would achieve some of those goals of improving care, driving down costs?
I think that the patient-centered medical home is one opportunity that we have that needs to be looked at further. In Battle Creek, we have a program called PACE for, it's run out of the Burnham Brooks Center. And I think that Dr. Kathy Beard is the physician who is currently heading that up after Dr. Gary Wirtz had previously set up the program. And this is a program that you take dual-eligible senior people under both the Medicare and Medicaid programs, and you help guide their care. And you have the doctors largely in charge of their care. And I think that is opportunity that needs further exploration. HRAs, the
what does that stand
for? HSAs, the health savings accounts, was a plan that they had put together and championed largely down in Indiana, as I understand it. And they reported some very good initial improvements at significant cost savings. And one of the things that we really need to do is we need to get our public involved in their health care. If we show up at the doctor's office and say, you need to take care of me, that's a very, very expensive endeavor. If you are out there and you say, I need to take care of myself, I need to go out there, I need to go for this walk, I need to go for this run, I need to play some tennis, I need to play some golf, I need to get out there and watch my blood sugars and watch my blood pressures and get them down with help if necessary, but on my own with a little bit of weight loss would be ideal as well, we're going to see health costs drop dramatically. And you also have to realize that a lot of healthcare is spent in the last 6 months of life. And we need to come up with better answers other than, yes, we will provide you all care, even though we know it's futile and there is a high probability that several months from now, you will not be with us.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with John Bison. He is a candidate for the Republican nomination in Michigan's 62nd State House District. That includes the city of Battle Creek. Also here is Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman. Jennifer?
You've got some military experience. I don't know if you'd call yourself a military man, but we've got an Air National Guard base that's seen some losses, seen some wins. But do you think we're doing enough to lobby on behalf of that, to use that as to its full potential? And if not, what would you do?
Oh, I spent the morning this morning with Colonel Wilson, the commander of the base out there, and he was very kind to introduce me to his senior staff and give me a tour around the base, and I need to thank him so much for the opportunity to get out there with him. I think those are some incredible facilities that we have out there, and if you ask, are we fully utilizing those facilities, I would think not. We have, what, the third longest runway in Michigan out there, and we use it for some cargo planes and for training at Western Michigan University, and it seems like that's a valuable resource that we ought to be able to find better uses for. They have a little bit of land there. I'd love to see us bring back some federal dollars from Washington and expand the base. And I think he's doing an incredible job. I think our guard does an incredible job. And I guess I just can't say enough good things about them.
Let me ask you about a couple of social issues. Should the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act be amended to include protections for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people?
Elliot Larson I see as being a real big gun going after a very, very small target. If you take a look at GLBT issues in most corporations, they already have significant policy in place saying that we aren't going to tolerate this, that they already have protections. When I look at Elliot Larson, oftentimes I think of the Tuskegee Airmen coming back and being asked to sit at a separate counter. I see the Tuskegee Airmen that we had here in Battle Creek about a month ago being segregated out of the population, and that was a major wrong. I guess I just haven't seen, and that's not to say that I wouldn't be willing to revisit Elliot Larson and the gay, because I'm sure that there will be further discussion of the issue. But I just don't see us having large-scale discrimination when most corporations will have policies in place to protect that portion of our population.
But it currently is not illegal to fire someone for being gay. Are you?
But by the same token, I am under the impression that especially large companies have policies in place that prevent the firing of people for being gay based upon that company's own policy. I mean, they are protected by large corporations.
Currently, right, but it's not in state law. You're comfortable with it not being in state law as long as you don't...
I like lesser regulation rather than greater regulation. And, you know, I don't know that we necessarily need to legislate every single issue.
Do you think that the state's amendment to the Constitution back in 2004, which banned same-sex marriage, should stand, should be left where it is?
I think this is an issue that we need to let the people decide. Back in
2004,
we went to the people and we said, what do you think? And I don't think that the right to say this is right or wrong rests with a few legislators in Lansing. I think that this is an issue that needs to be taken up by the people here within the state of Michigan. And if they want to revisit that issue, I would be perfectly happy with that answer.
So how would you vote if it was on the ballot?
I think that there is a certain amount to be said about traditional marriage. I'm a proponent of traditional marriage. I have four kids, and I think that procreation is important and in society. I think it is important that we respect all people immensely. And that's one of the things that even in my practice I try to do is respect each individual that is there with me. And I think that we would be much more civil as a society if we were able to do that. I have nothing against civil unions, but I think of marriage as being a sacrament between two people and God and the community. And if people want to find a minister who is comfortable with that and get married under those auspices, I would not have a problem with that.
But should the state recognize it? I mean, that's a question. that's kind of Jennifer's question, is would you vote for this so that the state would then recognize that marriage performed by whatever minister that would be?
Yeah, I would be open to discussion at the very least. You know, I think that I'm a huge fan of traditional marriage, of course. But times are changing. There are certain things in life that are important, and children are important.
One last thing here on something that is also changing, seemingly nationwide, marijuana decriminalization. Actually, last year when Jace Bolger, and Jennifer can attest to this because she was there as well when we interviewed him, he said that he was open to the idea of decriminalizing marijuana. He said he didn't see it as necessarily a whole lot more harmful than alcohol. He didn't think it would be made legal in Michigan, but he also didn't see the need for people to necessarily go to jail. So where do you come down on this? Do you think, of course, you're in the medical profession. What do you think about the possibility that marijuana could be simply a ticket like you would get for speeding?
You have to understand you're talking to someone who takes care of a great many head and neck cancers and has lost a great many friends to head and neck cancer, and someone who is not very supportive of smoking in general. Marijuana is a little bit different. Marijuana, I would much prefer seen as a social issue rather than a medical issue. I'm not sure that the discussion of medical marijuana is truly a medical discussion. It's people wanting to do things that are medically appropriate for other people. And this, again, is a social issue as I see it rather than it being medical. And if society wants to go in the realm of legalizing marijuana, I think that there are some good things, but that could be seen there. Increases in taxes, regulation, maybe decreases in crime, decreases in trafficking of controlled substances. But by the same token, you take a look at what Colorado's doing, and you know, you have kids in the bathrooms with their cigarettes to an even larger degree than they were previously. They have the electronic cigarettes that you can put other substances into as well. I think that we have our work cut out for us, and it all depends on what society wants to do with the marijuana question.
John Bizon, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me out, Gordon.
John Bizon is a physician. He's the former president of the Michigan State Medical Society. He is running for the Republican nomination in Michigan's 62nd State House District. And we also want to thank Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Thanks for having me.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.